Hello, listeners. This is Janine.
And Stephanie.
And this is The Course of Course, episode 24. Woo. I do want to say that we actually recorded this. It's a bit of a deja vu. We recorded the episode 24 on Saturday and had a bit of an issue with a microphone. It died on us.
Batteries.
Right. But it doesn't really exist. So, you know, we moved on. So we decided to re-record this. This is Tuesday instead of Saturday. So we were kind of in the dark for 3 days, but we wanted to make sure that we got another podcast out there. For our legions of fans, we don't want to disappoint them.
It was 91 degrees today in Los Angeles.
It's a little hot, one might say.
Very hot.
Yeah. It's cool in here, though, so that's good. In the podcast studio, we are very temperature controlled, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm going to jump into what's been happening with me. I was very excited because you printed out an article that was on the Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo discussion group, and it was called The History of the Manuscripts of A Course in Miracles, and I loved this, so thank you very much for printing this out. Rarely do I see printed out anything anymore. Usually I'm all online, so it was kind of a pleasure to have a tactile experience of holding it and actually paging through the pages.
Excellent.
What I loved about this article is it gave me a little more color on what happened in the very beginning with the manuscript. And I don't know, I guess the drama that happened when they were trying to get this copyrighted and all that kind of stuff. So all I can say is it's kind of nice to see that these folks that we hold in such high esteem actually went through some of the third dimension crazy planet world stuff that we do all the time. The background to the manuscript drama was that there were a couple hitches in their giddy up. It turned out there was a copy that was given to Hugh and Casey, who we sort of know, actually. We were at the ARE for a few years. I would call them my first family of spirituality. And we were in the ARE library all the time. So apparently there was a manuscript that Hugh and Casey had, and he kept it in I think a locked room or controlled room or something like that. Something happened. The manuscript was stolen.
Wow.
Which is unfortunate. So there's that drama. And then when they tried to get it copyrighted, it was actually taken away. I don't know if it was Library of Congress or where it was in Washington. It was photocopied.
And who was trying to get the copyright for it?
I think the Foundation and the Course of Miracles. Mm-hmm. Was it FACIM or something.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was just some crazy person or if it was our people.
Oh, no, our people. We've adopted them.
Like Bill and Ken Wapnick.
And was Helen. That? So once I find that name,
so
I'll
they self-published
you know.
To begin with the course, and then they eventually wanted to get a copyright?
I believe so, yes. Copyright. Judith Scutch.
Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, these lovely people are the reason why we're having this podcast. Actually, the combination of those people are the reason why we've been able to read the text and listen to the audio.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still looking for the identity of the gentleman who voices over the audio version of the course, because we have a little crush on him. So anyway, back to the article. It was, I'd say maybe 20 pages. Less than that, actually. It was 12 pages, but it was good reading. So anybody on the Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo discussion group, please read it. It's definitely worth your time. Many probably already know this story. I think I sort of got a little bit of it in my readings, but it was just nice having it together. And it was actually written by Ken Wapnick, so, you know.
Did they actually get the copyright for it, or what happened?
I think they have a copyright for something, but I don't know if the text itself is. Mm-hmm. I'm a little sketchy on that myself, but thank you very much for bringing that over. I do appreciate it.
Sure.
I will return it to you.
Yes, I will read it too.
In safekeeping. Right, so the other thing I wanted to say was we had talked a little about Busting Loose from the Money Game book. And that was a number of podcasts ago. And my friend Maya has been doing it. It's a great book for you listeners who haven't yet read it. It's definitely highly recommended. But one of the things I really liked about it is it talked about dropping things into your hologram, which is essentially what The Course in Miracles talks about without saying the words. So my friend Maya was talking about, you know, putting it in the hologram, and it was like it stuck in my mind. And then a couple of days later, I was talking to my sister, and I said, you know, I really want to reach out to an old roommate of mine who I haven't talked to for a while, and I couldn't remember her name, mostly because, you know, I'm old. And she couldn't remember either because she's old, too. And then all of a sudden, this happened on Saturday or Sunday. On Monday at work, I got a text from who? My old roommate. I couldn't remember her name.
Oh.
So, Mariana, it was only because I'm old. It's not because I couldn't remember because you didn't mean anything to me. You mean tremendous amount to me. So it was so lovely getting a text from her. I liked the kind of the appearance of her in my hologram. And it just happened because that's cool. How the course is. That's how the universe is. I mean, if we can do that right, then we can sort of just have things appear. So shout out to you, Mayor. I don't know if you're listening to these podcasts up in Northern California, but if you are, I just said your name 3 times.
Yes.
I'm going to write it down so I don't forget.
You know, when I think about the money book or the money game or trying to drop things into my hologram, I mean, there's a part of me that just wants to not
Why?
Think about what I need or what my goals are or what... You know,
it started to feel like it's old school thinking.
Well, I mean, the course is, I think, pretty clear about just like giving it all up and right. over to HSJ. So I could see where maybe that's why Gary said it was a good book, but it wasn't something that he wholeheartedly believed in because it could be missing that aspect of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a spiritual thing. It's more like an exercise thing, which I do appreciate.
I like the part of when you have an emotion over something, like paying a bill or whatever the person's confronted with. Because the money book was just the title. It's Correct. All aspects of our life.
Yes.
But to like really feel it and kind of then release it instead of stuffing it or avoiding it.
Exactly. It's like living with the feeling. And I hate the word confront because it feels so aggressive. But if something's coming up, then just deal with it. It's in your face. It's okay. Yeah. Work through it. But you're right. I think it's a natural reaction to avert it in some way. Distract yourself, walk away, not deal with it. And then it just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere. You know, it's like one of those ghosts that just kind of sits around waiting for you to interact with it again because it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, we have to fully forgive things in order to collapse them, I would say.
Yes. So speaking of forgiveness, I want to talk about me forgiving myself.
Okay.
Which is always a challenge. And this is in relation to romantic relationships. So I've had one for some time now, which, I talk about it to very few people, let's be honest. But it's one of the best relationships I've ever had, and I sort of am kind of quasi laughing about that because there's no way anybody would look at this and say, oh my God, that's the most ideal relationship. But the thing I really appreciate about it is it's so different and it doesn't feel as heavy as my other relationships have been. It's like, I love you too, blah, 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 right? It's kind of, I wouldn't even say it's on a higher level, but it's less heavy in terms of romantic love. It's far more just appreciating each other for just who we are and not with the trappings of it, which I never would have said it was okay years ago. And anybody who looks at the relationship through the eyes of kind of like traditional thinking mm-hmm. would say that is a horrible relationship and you should get rid of him because ladies are really big, like girlfriends are really big at that, where they would say, oh, you can do better. Mm-hmm. You know, you should break up with him. You can do better. I don't know why we do that to each other, but we do. You know, and anybody who would look at this one would be like, well, he's not very good. So I'm struggling with that because the reality is I'm not miserable. But yet everything around me and my own world thinking makes me say, oh, this is not right. This is not right at all. So it's like forgiving myself every day for mm-hmm. having thoughts that are not true.
That's great.
It's great, but That's I'm still present. Struggling with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like every day I waffle. It's like I get mad at him because he doesn't say something to me that I want him to say or behave in a certain way. But then I'm like, well, he doesn't owe me anything. I don't owe him anything. You know, we're together because we just really appreciate being with each other. But the other stuff kind of is not really present. And it's okay. It's pretty messed up. You know, I'm struggling because it's hard to explain this. It feels like it's so foreign to anything I've ever experienced.
I mean, one thing I think you can say that isn't too revealing is that you see each other every, like, a couple times a month. So you don't have the pressure of having to
Correct.
See each other every night or just weekends or whatever.
Yeah, so it's very true.
You have some space, which is good. Space is good.
I really like the fact that, you know, we have challenging jobs. And on the weekends, we like to just relax. And I don't mean this in a negative way, and I'm not saying that children are encumbrances, but we are not encumbered with children you know, we don't have to go to a soccer game on the weekends or anything like that. So it's nice when we have a weekend where we can just relax and do what we want to do, be in charge of our agenda. So in the relationship that I'm in, it's kind of nice to know that I don't have to worry about what are we going to do this weekend every weekend. I'm starting to think this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's like we get time together when we like being together, but I don't feel like we have to.
I think the special love, special hate, like I've definitely have had some hate in my relationships.
Oh, me too.
But the special love one's interesting to look at because that's what is common out there with everybody.
So I was also reading on Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo discussion group about specialness and how we in third dimension always want to be special. We're all our own little special snowflakes. You know, why aren't you treating me better? Because I'm special. And I've been dealing with this at work. Like, well, I'm special. Why don't I get the promotion or whatever? Because I'm special, you know? It's like trying to drop that. When we are growing up, especially with young girls, and we say, oh, what a pretty little princess. It's like, we got to stop doing stuff like that. Although it's sweet. I know it's coming from a sweet place. But it's less about, you're so special, you should be treated differently. The reality is, we're all the same. And it's really hard to keep remembering that in third dimension crazy planet, when it's clear that we are different, empirically.
Right. Yeah. But the ego tells us we are special.
All the time.
So that's just the point of view each individual has.
This afternoon at work, I probably caught myself being very egocentric 3 or 4 times this afternoon. And it was usually me picking out something I didn't like about my job situation or somebody at work. And I had to keep being diligent to say, stop it.
Good.
But I'm not always that diligent. Mm-hmm. Because it's exhausting, frankly, because, you know, if I truly am monitoring myself all day, put myself in a coma.
But you got to start somewhere.
I know. It doesn't make it easy, though.
Just, to put chinks in it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, take it away. Take it away.
Yeah. And when I was reading all the stuff on the Yahoo discussion group about specialness and these special relationships and how we make them into something they totally are not, it is all illusion. It's either a holy relationship or nothing.
But very few know about holy relationships.
That's true. And I think the word holy kind of brings in more of a religious connotation. So it's a little hard for me to start talking to somebody about, well, it's a holy relationship, because I think it takes them down the road differently than when I'm trying to take them, you know?
Yeah, they'd have to be a course student to understand it.
Right. And there's not a huge amount of course students out there.
But it is growing, thanks to Gary.
It's growing by two. You and me. Well, you know, I think there are people who are on the periphery of our lives who are interested in this, but not yet. I think you're more of a dedicated student than I am. I think I'm a student of it, but I'm not necessarily a student of the mechanics of it, of sitting down and meditating every day and all that kind of stuff. I read the workbook and the lessons and stuff, but I'm not as deeply engaged that you are. I think you're more of a practitioner.
Mm. I'm trying to apply it, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, all the time that I remember.
Exactly.
Because obviously I forget.
You know, I just wonder how long it's going to take before it becomes a behavior pattern for me. It worries me a little because we keep hearing about everybody's doing the course for 20, 30, 40 years. Person did it for 40 years. That's a long time. And we're not getting any younger.
This is true. It's a practice. And I just keep practicing. Like, driving down the road.
Jesus did it, and he died at 33.
Well, he already came in enlightened.
Yeah, nuts. So he came in enlightened, and then, because I thought you said in the Gary book, he was the first one that made it.
I found the page, by the way.
So was Jesus enlightened first, and then he transcended? Kind of like the Buddha was enlightened, and then he transcended the next lifetime?
Didn't say in the book how old he was when it happened.
Well, Jesus died at 33.
Right, but I have heard in the past that by age 11, he was already
a rabbi
in the temples and things, and they looked to him as a teacher and as a master, like even at 11.
How bizarre would that have been?
Yeah, I don't know if he was born that way. Okay, so on DU on page 548, which I have a bigger font, so sorry, people. It says, you will have the Holy Spirit's entire thought system, which Jay can articulate because he was the first one in the dream to complete his part perfectly.
Wow. Good for you, Jay.
So, thank you for bringing us the course.
That was, 2015 years ago?
Yes.
I mean, in Earth time. Although I'm confused. AD is after death, Anno Domini. So that would mean at 34 he died, and then year one was the day after his death. Because I thought that year one was the year of his birth.
I have no idea. Hmm. I just heard BC meant before Christ, and I had no idea what AD ever meant.
Yeah. Math is hard, I think, how to calculate this, but I guess it doesn't really matter. So let's just round it off and say 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, in the dream timeline.
And they were saying in DU how lucky we are to have come in close to when the course came through, so it hasn't been altered too much.
Yeah.
Because 2,000 years ago, people couldn't get this information or they'd be killed.
Right.
And very few people knew it. I mean, even the apostles had 20 more lifetimes after being around Jesus.
Right.
You know, mentally, intellectually, people think they get it, which I'm sure we think the same thing, but it still took a few more lifetimes to actually get it all the way. But I mean, hopefully because of the course, we won't have to suffer.
Yeah, I said this before. I think just our timeline, chronologically, we are very blessed because we were born in the United States and, you know, a time of relative wealth. And, you know, although it can be a little dangerous, bigger picture in the United States, we've always been safe and we've always been taken care of. So it's been, you know, it's not like we've been struggling like the Middle East, you know, where are worrying sometimes going from one block to another if they're going to be harmed. We right. don't really have to worry about that too much. But also just the joy of being around the course and being around so many more kind of spiritual enlightened people. And we've kind of passed that whole turmoil in the United States, Vietnam and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but we still have a lot of breakdown here.
We do. I don't think it's like perfect. I'm just saying that it to me.
But our experience has been pretty kind compared to how others could.
Right. Have. And we've been able to kind of experience and enjoy the Casey legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the course legacy and all that kind of stuff. So that's been really nice.
We planned that with the Holy Spirit.
We totally planned it.
And maybe there'll be a whole bunch of us in this generation that will help wake up the world.
Because the world needs to wake up. Well, it's nice that, you know, on occasion we can wake up. That's sweet. But I never thought like 5 years ago, my goal ultimately would be just to never come back down here again and to just learn as much as I can about the course and forgiveness. Who in the world would have thought that? Like, it's mind-blowing how much things have changed.
Yeah, I mean, just in the last 2 years since we picked it up.
Just, you know, that moment that I downloaded Disappearance of the Universe and started reading it, that was the pivotal moment in my life. The pivotal moment.
I agree.
And it's been a part of it
all
since then.
To then. So what is sin? Sin is insanity. It is the means by which the mind is driven mad and seeks to let illusions take the place of truth.
Why did you feel the need to talk about sin?
Because that's in my lessons right now.
Oh, okay.
And I just feel so connected that this is a mental process. It's and just how messed up the mind is.
Oh, yes.
And it's all the mind. Like, it just, I don't know, I feel like another layer of the onion is peeling away where it just, I can see the movie happening, you know? Mm-hmm. I can forgive it. I don't know, it's just...
I was saying to you at dinner today that I feel like, for me, I'm becoming less and less attached to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It feels apathetic almost, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it also feels odd that I should be feeling something, and I'm not. And, like, we studied Abraham Hicks for a while, mm-hmm. and they're all about feeling, getting into a good feeling place, and I could never get there. Because it never made sense to my analytical brain. Like, mm-hmm. what does that mean? Get into a feeling place and reach for the higher flying disc or whatever. It never worked for me. And, you know, nothing against it. I think Abe Hicks is fantastic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for what I was going through and what I was trying to make sense of, it didn't work for me.
Well, we weren't ready for the course until now. So it all happened as it was
supposed
to.
So, like, from a progression standpoint, we went from the Casey stuff to Abe Hicks and now to the course.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been important stepping stones. I think I wouldn't have got anywhere unless I did the Casey work.
And Landmark was a huge
Landmark for you.
Huge.
Yeah.
For me. But, you know, all my friends with depression, I was thinking that sometimes I have moments even when I feel tired and upset and I feel down. I might feel lost. And I just think it's just part of that mental mind that's always trying to take over, that's trying to keep us separated from God.
Mm-hmm.
So whether I see it outside of me in people and their relationships, or it's inside of me, because it's always going on inside of me. I just feel like I just have to keep giving it up. And that's what I'm practicing. Loving everyone, coming from we are all one. We're just splinters and fractions of the mind. And we're here to remind ourselves who we are and to forgive it all and to give it back over.
You had said loving everyone. Mm-hmm. So can we explore that a little? So again, I get the concept. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people in my life that I wouldn't say I love. So what does that really mean?
Well, to me, it would mean like if someone's being difficult at work and so we're not liking them or something.
Yeah.
Is that the mind... has the wrong side of the mind has created all of it, and they're coming to us as a reminder that it's going to push our buttons, that we're not going to like it, that it's going to take us on this spin that's going to preoccupy us with how to solve it, how to fix it, how to deal with it. Like, there's so many layers and roads you can go down with people we don't like or people that we do like, but it's all just not God.
But I think that's the switch mental. I'm having problems flipping. Because I get what you're saying, right, in the words. But if somebody's in front of me and I don't really like them, you know, I've had my slow burn at work.
Mm-hmm.
I get that they're a part of me, but I'm having problems transforming that in front of my face. And I don't quite have the skills to do that.
What does Gary say? That they're pure and innocent and mm-hmm. all is forgiven?
Correct.
So if I can just... think of, like, I created this person to show up in my life to remind me that they're not really that, and they are a part of me, like I'm all part of that one, and by forgiving them and letting them be pure and innocent, then the love can come through, because they're not really doing that. I mean, they're only doing that because you asked them to. It's a sick cycle.
Right.
But I feel like there's no power in it when we know that it's just, you know, it's just a tool by the ego to keep us separated.
Yeah, I think the quote is, you are pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. My thing is remembering this mm-hmm. at the time that I'm being confronted by the person I cast in the role of being a villain. Because I get so swept up in the ego part of it. Because I'm a special snowflake. And how dare they not treat me like I'm special.
Well, I think it does take time.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, while you're talking with them in that moment, as soon as you think of it, then you do it.
So time could actually be a gift, right?
I think it is a gift.
Because it allows us space to work through things.
Yeah, exactly.
So instantaneous isn't always the best way to go. Because I was thinking with my sister the other day, wouldn't it be nice if we could just create something out of thin air? Yes, but it probably is better for our being and our souls if we work through something instead of relying on magic mm-hmm. to cure something. Because I could get a lottery ticket and win lottery money, you know, if that's in my script. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily going to fix stuff. We can't just keep looking at bandages to put on wounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, I'll have $1 million or whatever. I can pay off debts. But it doesn't mean that my life's going to be any better. It mm-hmm. just changes a few numbers in the bank statement. That's all. So the more time we have, and it's one of the reasons why I find that my time is so precious. And I get a little annoyed when people want to schedule me on the weekends. It doesn't matter that I just stare at the wall or watch TV. I love the fact that I can own my own time, mm-hmm. I think. You're so much better with that than I am. Like, you give so much of your time to so many people. I'm like on the other end of that spectrum. I'm like, oh no, I can't. I can't be bothered with going to see somebody because, you know, there's got to be some ridiculous reality show on TV. But I embrace the fact that for whatever reason, that's what I need right now.
Sure.
You know?
I'm also trying to balance that a little bit better. This is the first week I've had, I think, 2 nights off in 1 week.
I know, that's bizarre for you.
So I just finished a huge project and I'm really happy with the outcome and that it's over. So I'm kind of looking at, how am I going to design the next few months of my life? I mean, as soon as that guard comes in, we get stuff planted,
mm-hmm.
I'll be over there. But even that, I want to try and not go crazy because it's easy for me to plant a whole bunch of things that we might not get to eat at all.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, it's so exciting when we do stuff that we're passionate about. I just mm-hmm. want to keep doing it. But one of the, I guess it's not a horrible thing that you kind of grow more than people can eat. Because I guess you can
Give it away.
Give it away, yeah.
Yeah, but even cleaning it and prepping it to give to people takes time.
Right.
Like, I can easily spend a couple hours in the kitchen after I've come home from the garden just washing everything, because there's a lot.
But it's got to be gratifying to put a seed in the ground and have it come out as this amazing vegetable. Be like, yes.
That seems magical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's magic of the dream. the dream is pretty magical when you think about it.
It is. I feel ready to wake up from the dream.
Yeah, me too. Although I must say my dreams are very creative. Like, I dreamt Kevin Spacey was my husband the other day from House of Cards. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll just go with it. It's bizarre, like, people that show up in your dreams that you hadn't thought about for a while. And all right, well, on that note, I'm going to let everyone go back to their dream state. Thank you very much, listeners. We are looking forward to bringing the Course of Course episode 25, our Silver Jubilee.
Yeehaw.
Hopefully this weekend. So,
oh, a big shout out to Giddy Up Mike, who's traveling to Toronto to see Gary and all the people up in Toronto who are going to the workshop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Also known as Mike Lemieux, in case people don't know who Giddy Up Mike is.
Sorry.
Yeah,
Jay Fish, author of The Art and Persa, Greatest Hits.
What are you talking about?
It's Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish?
Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish? A book that we both love very much. And then Gary Renard will be there in Toronto. We wish we were there, because I love T.O., one of my favorite cities, as we go on and on. Anyway, thank you very much, listeners. We will see you next week.